Hi everyone, this is Steve. Welcome to Pacific Life Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to check out our website, pacificlifechurch.org, and subscribe to our email list. The email is actually the best way to keep up with everything going on around here at PLC. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation will inspire you to follow Jesus, love each other, and serve your neighbors. My family and I love to go to Costa Rica. It's one of our favorite places to vacation. And there's a couple of national parks that we go to over there, and they will give you a tour. And there's, you know, animals that are, you know, they're in their natural habitat, and they're beautiful. If you've ever been to Costa Rica, they've got these crazy, beautifully colored animals. And one of the ones that I'd always wanted to see up close was a sloth, but it seemed like every time that we went there, there'd be a tour guide, and they go, there's a sloth. And they'd come up and you'd look up and they're about 50 feet up in the tree. You could barely see it. You know, they hand you a pair of binoculars and you're like, yeah, I think I kind of see it. So on one of these trips we made, we were on our way back to our hotel. And when we started to turn up the dirt road to our hotel, we came to this one hairpin turn and there was a tree there. And on the tree, right there, just right in front of me, was a sloth. My window was down and I could have literally reached out and touched the sloth. I mean, it was that close to me. And so I'm right there with my kids and all of us are like, oh my gosh, it's right there. It's a sloth. It's right in front of us. And I remember that when the sloth saw me, it was trying to get away. I have never seen any kind of creature move that slow that was trying to escape. Thus the word sloth. That's why they call them that. They sleep 20 hours a day. They are so slow that algae can actually grow on their fur. So we've been talking about the seven deadly sins. And today we're going to find out, and we're going to actually explore the idea of the sin of sloth. Sloth. And probably the best way to start is actually to get a working definition so we're all on the same page of what sloth actually is. And so we know that it's reluctance to or make an effort towards anything. It's laziness. It's a person who's unmotivated, a person who contributes nothing. Okay, that's some of the words that would describe sloth. And the word actually comes from a Latin word meaning without care. Like, I don't care. You ever meet somebody like that? I don't care. I don't care about anything. I don't care about you. I don't care about even myself. That's a good definition. So as we talk about this, you might be tempted to say, okay, so that's one of the seven deadly sins. I mean, like you got wrath and you got lust and you got greed and you got some pretty gnarly things, sins out there, but that's a part of that? Yeah, it is. You might really be surprised, but this could actually be one of the worst because slothfulness can ruin us. It can absolutely ruin our lives. And it just might be the most relevant deadly sin as it relates to what's going on in our culture today. If you've been paying any attention to the news, you know that we are now post-pandemic for the most part. People are going back to work. Life is beginning to move towards some kind of normal. But part of the problem is a whole bunch of people don't want to go back to work. My son, Stevie, works at a restaurant. He's in the management level. Nobody wants to go back to work. Like, they're practically begging people to come back to work. But people, and I've heard this all across the country, people are like, well, no, actually, you know, I'm getting unemployment. And then other people, it's like, well, I got some money saved up from, you know, some of the stimulus packages and things like that were sent to us. And I don't want to go back to work. But the worst of all is the people that are gaming the system. The people, and I've actually heard people just bragging about that. Hordes of people out there today that think they're really cool because, like, well, you know, I'm not working because I figured out a way to, you know, make it off the government or somebody else. So we're going to talk about that. So the Hebrew word sluggard is used 14 times, and especially in the book of Proverbs. So let me read just a few scriptures to you it's like sluggard and sloth are kind of, they're in the same kind of category. Proverbs 21:25 says, the craving of a sluggard will be the ruin of him because his hand refuses to work. He doesn't want to work. Proverbs 13:4 says, a sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. So it's kind of the contrast between the working person and the non-working person. Proverbs 26:14 says this, as a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns in his bed. You ever had a roommate like that? Like, dude, just get out of bed, man. This is a real descriptive one. Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 34. Listen to this. I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who had no sense. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds, and the stone wall was in ruins. I applied my heart to what I observed, and I learned a lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief, and scarcity like an armed man. It gives you a sense of what a productive man who wrote this looks at a sluggard and sees. So to put everything into perspective relative to our culture, North America, our country, is a very driven country. So I've been talking about, you know, slothfulness, and there are definitely are people that fall into that category. But as a nation, we are a very, very driven, productive nation. As a matter of fact, a lot of people, you know, we live on caffeine and Red Bull and energy drinks and whatever it takes just to keep us going. We work an average of 50 hours a week. Now, when you compare that to a lot of our European neighbors and their countries and other countries in the world, we're very, very hyper-productive country. So here's the point that I want to make. And also, in our country, careers are almost idols to us. So I know that what I'm saying to you right now sounds like, well, then we don't seem to have a problem with slothfulness, but actually we do. The point is that you can be busy, and we're super busy, most of us, and you can be slothful. You might say, hey, hang on there, Steve, excuse me. Isn't that kind of an oxymoron? Just like you're busy and you're slothful. Well, see, here's the thing. In spite of our busyness, we watch, on average, what they tell us, about 5.5 hours of TV a day, whenever you watch TV. That we spend hours on our smartphones. We spend hours doing social media. We're on Facebook. We spend hours shopping for Amazon, TikTok, Instagram, watching every, you know, did you know that that we tweet 6,000 times every second, 350,000 times per minute, 500 million times a day. There's tweeting. So people like tweeting all of this stuff that means nothing. So does this mean that we should never, against Steve, like, whoa, that's kind of hardcore. Steve, does this mean that we should never watch TV or play video games or do social media? No, I'm not saying that. I think, I don't know about you, I can speak for myself. You know, after a hard day, come home and, the synapses have been firing all day and like, oh, you know, I'm tired. So I want to come home and decompress a little bit. So my wife and I on a Monday, typically we'll watch, you know, The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. Absolutely worthless show, right? But it's just pure entertainment for us, right? And for some of you, that's okay. We need something, whether you're watching a Padre game or you're just watching something and it's just fun for entertainment. But I'm talking about something that goes way beyond that. Something that is just a huge time waster. So here's what we see. We are busy and distracted in our culture, which means that you can be a workaholic. At the same time, you can be slothful. We are wasting too much time on basically things that are worthless. Clinical psychologists tell us there's a direct correlation between sloth and depression. In fact, the unmotivated person is usually not a very happy person. You ever meet somebody like that? They're inspired about nothing. They don't want to get up. They don't want to do anything. So what is? Here's the question. What is the solution to the deadly sin of sloth? What is the solution? And this is what we're going to talk about. We are going to look at three aspects of sloth and how to move towards virtue, okay, away from sloth and what God's ideal is for us. And so the first one is this, physical sloth. So this is a hammer. It's actually a hammer that I used to use when I was framing. It's a framing hammer. I've had this, actually, I think I got it when I was 22 years old, and which means I've had this hammer for a long time. And there was a lot of physical labor that I've been a part of. I used to do cement work. A lot of construction. And then, so let me ask you the question: how many of you have a job that involves being physical? You can go way beyond construction. There's a lot of jobs that, there's a certain amount of physicality that's required in your job. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. So when I was growing up, my dad, huge, like serious worker, like work was everything to my dad. He grew up poor. When he was 5 years old, he was on the streets of San Jose, California, shining shoes. Different era, right? You could do those kind of things. It was a lot safer back then. So when I'm growing up, my dad is just drilling into me. Work is good. Work is awesome. If you work, you'll make money. It'll make your life better. It'll make everything better. So I just got this from my dad as I'm growing up. Man, okay, work is a great thing. So by the time I'm 8 years old, I'm knocking on doors in my neighborhood. I'm saying, "Hey, can I mow your lawn for money?" And so I started working when I was 8 years old. Now, again, today, can't do that, different time. By the time I was 12 years old, my dad used to have a service station. He had mechanics and all kinds of stuff going on and the gas pumps. And so I started working for him when I was 12 years old. Probably broke all the child labor laws for sure. Because in the summertime, we would do 12-hour days. By the time I got with him in the morning and then came back home, it was a 12-hour day. But I learned the value of work. And one of the things that I see today, and every once in a while I talk to a man or a woman, and I see that in their home that was not a value. As a matter of fact, they look at it just in a completely different way, that work was not a good thing. Well, so let me ask you this question. Have you ever had a terrible job? I think probably most of us have. You're like, "Oh, that was the worst job ever." I've had quite a few of those jobs. I remember I had a job where I was scanning music in a store, and it was just killing me. I've had a job. One time I worked on a mushroom farm. Do you know what they grow mushrooms in? Don't answer that question. Okay, it's not good. I've done assembly line work. I can go on and on about all the jobs that I didn't like. Let me ask you another question. Have you ever had a horrible boss? Remember that movie, Horrible Bosses? It was super funny. But it's not funny when you actually have a horrible boss. So maybe you've been in that situation. And maybe this is one of the reasons that we kind of look down at work. We like, "I didn't like the job." I get that. "I didn't like my boss." I get that. So how do you handle that when you get in a situation like that? So this was my go-to verse when I had a job that I didn't like. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, it says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for," and here's the key to it right here, "as working for the Lord, not for human masters." So whenever I was working for somebody I didn't like or had a job that I didn't like, I go, "God, I'm working for you." And a lot of times, even when I had a job that I didn't like, it was like, "I'm working for my family, you know? I'm doing something that's productive, it's paying the bills." And sometimes that's what it comes down to. We need to have a healthy view of work. Most of you are familiar with the idea of Pandora's box, and we think, "Oh, Pandora, you don't ever open Pandora's box." It's Greek mythology, and Zeus actually was the guy that introduced Pandora's box to really be a curse on some of the lesser gods. And so it's interesting what was in that box. When we think of, all the stuff that comes out of Pandora's box, we think of misery and pain and sickness and death. And guess what else was in there? Work, right? So, and like that culturally, like work, oh, work is terrible. And there are a lot of cultures and even families that's just the way they kind of look down on work. Like if we didn't have to work, that would be the greatest thing ever. But the question we need to ask ourselves is like, how does God view work? What does God think about work? Well, if you go to the creation story and you go to Genesis chapter 2, verse 2, it says, "By the seventh day," so what's happening is God is creating, he's working, right? "By the seventh day, God has finished the work that he's been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all of his work." Remember, he stands back and he goes, "Oh man, it's good. This is all good. It's good work." God loved his work. I love his work, man. I love all the beautiful things that he made in this world. And then in John chapter 5, verse 17, Jesus speaking here, he says, "My Father is always at work to this very day, and I am working too." So we get a sense of God's heart. Like God thinks that work is great. In fact, we were created to work. We were created to be productive so that we could be blessed ourselves, because when you work, you make money and it blesses you, and also that we could be a blessing to others. The Apostle Paul talked a lot about being productive and making money so that you could share that money with other people and bless others. My kids were like, I drilled the same work ethic into them. that my dad drilled into me. I mean, I taught from a very young age, you know, how to interview for jobs and the value of work and work is good. And so when they were going to college and even post-college, they would live with us at times, but they always work. But I look at today, one of the problems I see in our country today is people, adults, you know, I'm going to just pick on male men. Like, there are 30-year-old guys that are living in their parents' basement, and they're not working, and they're just so they're playing video games and smoking weed and drinking beer and doing porn all day long, and they're just waiting for, you know, some woman who's going to be able to support them the rest of their life. I think, how tragic is that? That is the ultimate description of a sluggard. Now, maybe I'm weird when I say this. You probably think I'm weird anyway, but I can only stand so much vacation time. And then I get restless and I get bored and I actually want to go back to work. I actually really like to work. I was on a cruise some years ago, and I'd never been on a cruise before. And I was with my family. Everybody's having a good time. And so, you know, if you've been on a cruise, you know, you kind of like do the same thing every day. And then after like day four or five, you're like, really? It starts to feel like Groundhog Day. Like, really, we're, you know, so I get up and, you know, do a workout and then, you know, have breakfast and then, you know, do some other thing. And then I'm going to eat and I'm going to do this other thing. And then I eat some more. You know, you do a lot of eating on the cruises. And then I'm going to go, you know, go to a comedy club or something like that. And then it'll be over. And after a while, you're like, this is killing me, man. I just want to go back to work. One time I was in Costa Rica with my family. And normally we do 2-week vacations. But some dear brother who was very wealthy blessed us with a 5-star accommodation place over in Costa Rica. It was amazing. First 2 weeks, I'm just like, this is unbelievable. I'd never been in a place that was so nice, unbelievable. But then 2 weeks goes by and we got another whole nother week to go. And I'm restless. I'm pacing the floor. I've surfed every day. Actually, I'm getting kind of tired of surfing every day. And like, I'm just wanting to get back to work. Because I feel like I'm wired to work, and then there's enjoyment in work. So right now, I'm at retirement age. You know, I'm getting all that stuff in the mail, you know, about all that, right? Have been for some time now. And you know, people my age, I'm 66. And so people are going like, well, yeah, you're going to retire. And I have to be honest with you, it terrifies me to think about retiring. Now, having said that, some of you are like, well, when are you gonna pastor till you're 90? Well, no, I don't think I'm gonna do that. But I do wanna continue to stay active and working. To me, the idea of doing nothing it just sounds awful. So listen to what this author, Dorothy Sayers, has to say about our attitude towards work. Okay, so this is so descriptive sometimes of how we as Americans in particular think about work. She said, the habit of thinking about work as something one does to make money is so ingrained in us that we can scarcely imagine what a revolutionary change it would be to psychologically and socially to think otherwise. In the modern view, people become doctors not primarily to relieve suffering, but to bring themselves and their family up in the world. People become lawyers not because they have a passion for justice, but to bring themselves and their family up in the world. Basically, what she is saying is she's saying that's not really the right motivation for working. In other words, it's not just about the paycheck. It's just not just about status. If we think that that's what work is all about, we're really, really missing the point. So physical work is a good thing. Secondly, intellectual sloth. We'll talk about that. Can kill the mind. This is a really good book right here. And I've read, at this point, I'm a voracious reader. I've read thousands of books. So I read this not too long. It's called Indispensable. The beautiful thing about this is I read these kind of things, it helps me intellectually, to know God better and to understand the world and understand people. Think about this. There has never, ever been a time when we have more information than we do right now. We are on the information highway, right? And we have all that information right at our fingertips. But in light of this, shouldn't we now be the most intelligent, the brightest, most genius generation ever? And yet people are doing studies. People are actually writing books about this. And they're saying this is the dumbest generation that we've ever had that's coming up. And the question would be why? It's because people are accessing the information that amounts to nothing. It's like a bunch of nothing information. It's like all this trivia that amounts to nothing. Point in case, people that should just know the very basics of life, like geography, you know, South America, North America, Central America, who created the light bulb, you know? They have these, you ever watch these Man on the Street interviews? 4th of July, I saw this a while back, I couldn't believe it. So what is the 4th of July really all about? I think something happened in France. I heard another guy say, I think Iraq had something to do with it. I'm like, I'm not ready to pull what little hair I have out of my head. I'm going, are you kidding me? Are we this dumb? I see this all the time. I'm thinking, what are people putting into their head? Remember, God gave us this mind. We are supposed to worship the Lord with all of our soul, strength, mind, and body, right? The mind. The mind plays a key role in the way that we worship God. As a matter of fact, in Proverbs 1:7, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So we need to disciple our minds. I think that we are incredibly distracted. I think this is one of the things that's really hurting us today. We're so distracted. And I totally get that. It's hard to focus today with all the information out there, with, you know, just all of everything that's shiny and happening and just like information overload. I recently heard somebody say something that really resonated with me. They were talking about the Roman Empire. And they were talking about the fact that in the Roman Empire, they made this incredible discovery. It was how to get running water through pipes into a home. So the first time ever in the Roman Empire, people had running water in their homes through these pipes. And it just seemed like the greatest invention ever. And it actually was until later on, they discovered that the pipes, they were lead pipes. And it actually began to poison the people. And something that originally had started off that was so awesome, a great discovery, turned out to be death-like. And they said, the person that was talking about this said, that's what social media has become today. It is the lead pipes of our civilization and our communities today. I have a therapist friend who tells me that social media keeps her in business. The opposite of distraction is focus. One of the things that I've been trying to do, and maybe you'll think about doing this, I'm trying to detox from my phone. I'm trying to detox from social media. And sometimes it's hard. I mean, you know, it feels good. Like if, you know, you're engaging, whether it's, you know, Facebook or anything that you're on at that particular time, it's like, you just kind of get sucked into it. And sometimes just to say, I can't do that. You know, it's wasting too much of my time. And again, I feel like I'm detoxing from it, but I feel better. I feel better. My mind has more clarity because I've started to do that. I remember not too long ago, I was at a store and my wife and I were doing some shopping, and Karen wanted to buy a dress. And so she goes into the dressing room. She's trying on the dress. And I had a seat, and there was this guy about my same age. His wife is in there trying out a dress. We're both sitting there scrolling on our phones, and we're sitting right next to each other. Finally, I looked over at this guy and I said, it's actually come to this, huh? I said, here we are sitting next to each other and we're looking at our phones, not talking. I go, wouldn't it be cool just to have a conversation? And he started laughing. He goes, totally. And we ended up having this really, really great conversation. But it's these kind of things that really wreak havoc on our minds and the ability to have genuine conversations in our culture today. It's like there's a war on our souls. And so much of it has to do with our mind and the things that are distracting us. So on a spiritual level, like, what do you actually know? I'm talking a little bit more like theologically. One time I was an intern while I was in college, and they wanted me to teach a Sunday school class at this particular church I was an intern at. So I was a little intimidated because I was teaching college students, and I was a college student. So I thought, well, I want to teach them theology. And so I thought, well, how am I going to approach this? I had this crazy idea. I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach them a cult. Like, I'm going to give them just this doctrine from this cult, see if they catch on to it, and then we can actually talk about what good theology is as opposed to really bad theology. But here's the real tragic part of it. I taught for 2 or 3 weeks in a row, and I'm like teaching just complete heresy. And I'm saying, so are we good? And everybody's like, got it, man, good. I go, serious? Like, this is good? You know, and finally at 3 weeks, into it, I said, okay, here's what I want all of you to know. I have been teaching you horrible, heretical doctrine from a cult. And not one of you has said, oh, this doesn't sound very good to me. Which, you know, which begs the question, what do we, you know, we see, you know, our minds have to be in a place, especially as followers of Jesus, if we take this serious, where we actually know what we believe. And we actually know why we believe what we believe. One of the major Baptist seminaries in our country, they had a bunch of freshmen come in, as they do every year. And one of the things that they asked them to do is just name the Ten Commandments. One out of 50 could name the Ten Commandments. Sloppy, lazy thinking leads to a sloppy, lazy life. Do you know what you believe? Do you know why you believe it? When I was 29 years old, so I'd by this time, you know, gone through high school, great C student, right? But I actually started developing my critical thinking skills when I was in college. And then when I was 29, I was in ministry, and I was teaching a Sunday school class for a bunch of adults one day, and this guy, who I'd never seen before, comes into the back of the class. And he sits down, and I'm talking, and so, you know, I would always have like a question and answer. So, hey, he asked me a question, but it wasn't the same kind of question other people were asking me. These were really deep, penetrating questions. And then he would challenge my answer. I'm like, what? I mean, the guy really kind of embarrassed me a little bit. And what he was doing is he was kind of getting to the, like, okay, you say that, and you're like giving us information, but do you actually believe that? And where is that actually coming from? So he challenged me so much that, first of all, we became great friends. And secondly, I never, ever approached a class the same way. Whenever I was going to dispense information or teach from the Bible, whatever it was, I went a lot deeper and said, if I'm going to teach this, I have to know why I believe it and do I believe it? And that's part of the developing your critical thinking skills. By the way, today he's an attorney. He's a civil rights lawyer. And so he really helped me a lot. Thirdly, spiritual sloth kills the soul. It kills the soul. This is a Bible. I love the Bible. And I need to know this Bible. So this is something that will help us on a spiritual level. It's the Word of God. The spiritual life is it's a rigorous life, and it's so just so we set the record straight. It's not about, as some people think, it's not about one day signing a card, I will be a follower of Jesus. It's not about praying that prayer that somebody told you to pray. It's not about going through that religious ceremony that you went through. It's so much more than Jesus said, if you're going to follow me, you must pick up your cross daily. And follow me. And what this means is spiritual disciplines. It means daily, like engaging God in prayer. It means daily picking up the Bible and actually reading more than two verses, like actually study the Bible. It means being in spiritual community. That's why we have life groups. And as much as I love this online thing that we do, and people are being blessed by it, it's so great to actually connect with people on an eyeball-to-eyeball physical level where we get together. It's about being generous. It's about serving people. As a matter of fact, in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus tells, you know, parables. This one's called the parable of the talent. I'm not going to tell you the whole thing, but it's one of the most terrifying parables because it's about these three guys that they're basically, it breaks down to their life, their gifts, their talents, abilities, everything that they have. And then they're called in to give an account. And two of the servants come back and they've done really well, but one of them doesn't. And the guy that comes back, and he's just done nothing. He's a zero. He's contributed to nothing. He's done nothing with what God gave to him. And this is what God says to him. He says, you wicked and lazy servant. You're a sloth. You're a sluggard. It's basically what it comes down to. So the Bible gives us this beautiful job description. You're going to find this in Ephesians 2:10. It says, for we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. In other words, before you were born, before I was born, God said, I got something for you to do. It's going to be really good. It's going to be work, but you're going to make a contribution to this world. Just before Jesus was crucified, he's with his disciples, and he's preparing them for what's going to happen. And what does he do? He does something that really disturbs the disciples. He gets down and he begins to wash their feet. And they're like, no, 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 no. And their minds is like, this is really beneath us, Jesus. Come on, man. We're going to be like big time. And you're like, wanting us to wash, don't wash our feet. Jesus goes, no, I'm going to wash your feet. And then after he's done, he says, now I expect you to do the same. You go out there and you serve. You serve. You make your contribution to this world. And washing feet in that particular time would have been a way of a great service of helping people. That's why at Pacific Life Church, we're all about serving. We serve our community. We serve families. We give generously. We help. We love. And do everything we can to make a contribution to this world, to help people to know God. James, the half-brother of Jesus, I'm just about finished here. James chapter 1, verse 27 says this, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows and their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. In other words, what he's saying, he says, do, go. Just do something. The sluggard does nothing. The person who has no motivation does nothing. The sloth does nothing. So I conclude with this. You've listened to this and you're like, kind of intense, Steve. Kind of harsh, like, wow, never heard it that way before. So I'm not saying these things because they're not true, because they are true. And I'm not saying these things to shame anybody or guilt anybody. I'm just saying this to motivate you to do the best you can with your life. God gives us this beautiful thing called our life. And he says, I want you to go out, and work is such a big part of it. I want you to go out and make the world a better place. Okay? The best way you can do that is to know Jesus. And if you'd like to know Jesus, we just ask you to invite him into your heart today. We're here to help you. See you next week. Thanks again for listening to our podcast. If you'd like prayer to connect with us, please go to our website at pacificlifechurch.org, and we would love to connect with you.